Hello, my Walking with Jesus friends. It's Monday. I'm sure I didn't need to remind you of that. Have you ever been traveling when suddenly you needed to turn around? Perhaps there was something blocking the road ahead, or you remembered you forgot something and needed to go back. Or worse, maybe you discovered you were heading in the wrong direction and you needed to turn around. How did you feel as you turned back? Yesterday, I left you traveling with Moses and about 1 million people, most of them the Hebrew slaves and their families, who had just run out of Egypt in the middle of the night. This huge mass of people and animals were traveling both day and night, following a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. God was leading them and protecting them. Suddenly, the people stopped, confused. The guiding cloud was not moving. It seemed stalled. Can you hear the rumblings of the people wondering what was happening? What should they do? Now look, the cloud seems to actually be backtracking, heading back in the direction from which they came. Could it be the wind was moving the cloud rather than God's hand? What should the people do now? It made no sense to go back. The Exodus record explains it this way. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi-Hahiroth, between Migdal and the sea. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue the Hebrews. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord." Exodus 14, 1-4. This is now about the seventh time God has said his purpose is to be honored and glorified by Pharaoh and all who see what God is doing. I wonder how much of this Moses told the people. I'm guessing Moses told the people God had a plan. God was not confused. God had a specific plan and he wanted them to camp for a day or two as God was working a bigger purpose. I suspect Moses reminded the people how much they could trust God, his power, and his plans. So this huge moving mass of people and animals made a U-turn and headed back along the Red Sea and made camp. I've enclosed a map to help us see their route. What the fleeing Hebrew people didn't know, and what you and I often forget, is that God is always busy working many plans simultaneously. While these people had run out of Egypt in the middle of the night, do you remember what the Egyptians were doing? Wailing. That's right. All of Egypt was grieving the death of their firstborn sons as the angel of death had passed through Egypt. Now, in the days which followed that horrible night, Egyptians were burying their dead sons. Funerals, thousands of them in every village, city, and town. And as these funerals came to an end, the Pharaoh and his people looked around Egypt to see it had been devastated by the plagues, everywhere except the region of Goshen, where the Hebrew slaves had lived. But that whole area was abandoned. The Hebrews had been told by Pharaoh to go, and they had their families, their belongings, their animals, and everything they could carry gone out of Egypt on Passover night. For Egyptians, their grief was giving way to anger, especially in the palace. The God of the Hebrews had decimated Egypt through these powerful plagues, and this God had also led out of Egypt the huge labor force, the Hebrew slaves. Suddenly, Pharaoh faced a labor crisis. Who would make the mud bricks for his building projects? Who would replant their fields and haul the water to irrigate those fields? Who would clean up the mess from these plagues? The combination of the devastation and the deaths joined together to form a crisis. The record says, Pharaoh and his officials said, "What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and lost their services." So, Pharaoh had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites. The Egyptians pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they encamped by the sea near Pi-Hahiroth. As the Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. Exodus 14, 5-10. You see it, don't you, my friends? The euphoria the fleeing Hebrew slaves had been feeling for 2 or 3 days was turning into terror. They were trapped. The Red Sea on one side and Pharaoh's approaching chariot army on the other. Worse yet, God had led them into this trap, remember? The cloud had backed up, leading them back to this place. God had instructed Moses exactly where he wanted the Hebrews to camp. But standing in the camp among 1 million frightened, nearly panicked Hebrew slaves, everything looked like a Holocaust was about to happen. The people felt abandoned by the God who had rescued them. Nothing made any sense. Have you ever found yourself in such a situation, thinking you'd followed God as best you know how, but everything was turning bad, very bad, disastrous, in fact? The people cried out, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out here? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Moses had no explanation. Do you sometimes find yourself being questioned about God, or maybe even criticized by people, as though you are responsible for God's actions? Then Moses, empowered by the Spirit of God, made a profound statement that brings hope to people in desperate situations even today, almost 3,500 years later. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." Exodus 14, 13 and 14. All throughout this traveling city of 1 million people, everyone had an important decision to make. I wonder if some were already tearing any white cloth they could find and trying to tie it to a stick or a pole so they could wave it in surrender, hoping the Egyptians would be merciful. Were others building barricades with their carts and belongings, hoping to hide as the chariots would rush by? But Moses had told them to do something remarkable. Do not be afraid. How do you not be afraid when you're staring death in the face, or anything terrible for that matter? Fear will well up within you, but here Moses, and through Bible history many other times other leaders, call the people to not allow fear to overwhelm them. The only way to do that is to counter fear with something stronger, faith. Faith in something or someone more powerful than that which is causing you fear. The people had several recent experiences where God had brought a devastating plague on Egypt, but he had miraculously protected the Hebrews in Goshen. It happened with the flies, and with the boils, and with the death of the livestock, and with hail, and with locusts, and with darkness, and finally with the angel of death and their firstborn sons. The truth of the power of God was verified in their experience of his protection of them in the plagues. Therefore, yes, they could stand, defeating the fear within them by remembering God's powerful protection of them in their recent past. Now, can you and I do that, my friends? Can you look back and see the powerful work of God in your life? And using that, can you stand firm in faith today, defeating the worry and fear that is rising up within you? Moses had also told the Hebrews, "Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Lord will fight for you." Sometimes the battle we fight is against powerful enemies that we see with our eyes, we hear their taunts with our ears, we feel their weapons or their fists. But other times our enemy is unseen, as are his weapons. Ephesians 6 uses the same words of Moses in calling followers of Jesus to take your stand against the devil's schemes, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual forces of evil. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. Ephesians 6, 10-18. If you have fully trusted Jesus Christ to rescue you from your sin bondage, then God has given you very powerful spiritual armor with which you can fight the fear, worry, and even the attacks of the dark kingdom. The belt of God's truth, the breastplate of God's righteousness, that's his holiness imputed to you, the gospel of God's peace, the shield of God's faith, that's God giving you the ability to have great faith in him, the helmet of God's salvation, That's forgiveness of your sin and deliverance from your sin bondage. The sword of the Spirit, God's Word, available for you to battle the dark kingdom. And the power of prayer, your privilege to call upon God and receive His guidance any time. Now, friends, let's stand firm along with these Hebrew slaves and God's people down through the centuries, holding tightly by faith to all we know about God and firmly gripping our relationship with God through Jesus as we stand firm facing whatever the challenges are which face you today. And I found a song based on the powerful reality of what Moses said to those people as Pharaoh's army approached them. The link is in your notes. Stand firm, my friends.